Today on the AF Podcast, we have the long-awaited discussion on the mega blockbuster movie Black Panther. I'm joined by Andrew Mombo from ESPN's 30 for 30 podcast and DJ Keo as we take a deep dive into all of the topics from the pre-hype leading up to the movie and how it affected the culture, the portrayal of how the women in this movie were displayed, how this movie tried to push aside stereotypes about Africa. We spend a section on the podcast on Eric Killmonger, which is very necessary, how this might affect black movie making going forward. I mean, listen, we get into a lot of different topics here, so I hope you enjoy listening to it as much as we enjoy doing it. Spoiler alert, if you're one of the few people who haven't seen Black Panther yet, you may want to download this episode or bookmark this and tune in the moment you finish watching the movie. So if you decide to push through and continue listening to this right now, and we've ruined certain parts of this movie for you, you can't say I didn't warn you, right? Right? Right. And how do you tune into my podcast, you ask? Listen, it's very simple. South Shore Ave is available wherever you listen to podcasts. You can listen and subscribe to the latest episodes on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Stitcher under the name South Shore Ave. If you haven't subscribed yet, click the subscribe button on your podcast player right now. And also to listen to more podcasts on my site itself, make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. It's the Av Podcast with Cal C on South Shore Ave Radio. Wakanda for the culture.
Welcome to the Av Podcast with Cal C on South Shore Ave Radio.
Welcome to the AF Podcast. At this time, I'd like to welcome my special guest to talk about Black Panther. My first guest is a DJ producer from Toronto. He's a friend of the podcast and was nominated recently into the Fantasy Football Auto Draft Hall of Fame.
Oh, come on.
And my next guest, ironically enough, is my fantasy football nemesis, who I generally hate from September to December every year. And he's also...
I own you, Calvin.
No, stop saying that. You don't. Stop with that. And he's also a producer from ESPN's 30 for 30 podcast, which you can listen to wherever you listen to podcasts. Please welcome DJ Keo and Andrew Mombo to the show. What's good, brothers?
What's up, man?
Good, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no doubt. And yeah, stop lying to the people, Mambo. I feel like you should have fantasy football antagonists as what you do for your full-time job and not producer of ESPN's 30 for 30.
Stop making it so easy. I mean, at least you're way more of a challenge than, are you going to beep it out if I use his name? Like, you bleeped out my name when he spoke my name. But like, you know who I'm talking about. I used to own his team every season. At least you give a bit of a challenge.
I'm not even gonna do this fantasy stuff with you today. I'm not gonna do it.
We're here to talk about positivity. We're here to talk about black.
Yes, that's right. That's right. That's right.
Yeah, that's right.
So before we dive into all these topics about Black Panther, just two questions I have for you right off the bat. Number one, how much time did you guys watch this movie?
I've seen it twice.
Okay.
I also saw it twice. I was trying to see a third time yesterday. It didn't happen.
Okay.
But I will. I mean, I saw it a couple times, and I got to see it a third time at, I live right around the corner from Magic Johnson Cinema in Harlem. And so, like, I have to see it. And I have to see it within the first few weeks of it being out, because it's going to be a fun experience.
I feel like the next big black movie that comes out, I feel like I need to fly to Harlem just so I can watch at the Magic Johnson Theater. I feel like it's just...
Oh, my brother. Yo, I went and saw Get Out at Magic Johnson, like, the first week it was out.
Oh, good Lord, man.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I tell people all the time, it was one of the greatest cinematic experiences of my life, just being in that theater and watching Get Out in an all-black cinema in Harlem.
Okay,
Holy shit. How much
commentary was there?
It was just a running commentary, the whole thing. I watched the movie later on. Yeah, I saw the movie like later on a second time, and I was like, oh, I didn't even miss that whole plot line. Like, I missed that dialogue. It was being supplanted by other people's dialogue throughout the whole movie. It was fantastic. It was absolutely fantastic.
I feel there should be subtitles in black theaters. Just, you know, like, for just people so want to take this into the movie, yeah.
At certain ones, yeah. Just as soon as you see like this, the type of people that's coming in, you're like, yeah, just put the subtitles in because they're not going to hear what's going on. They're not going to hear what's going on here. I remember that for certain black movie premieres. I remember going to some of those, and the running commentary and that would be like, I still remember watching The Best Man, the premiere for The Best Man, like what was it, like almost 20 years ago, and that was hilarious. Just the running commentary. Because I mean, that movie's a classic to me, but like all the jokes just from in that in the crowd and stuff was hilarious. It was hilarious.
But I can't wait to see Black Panther at Magic Johnson. I gotta get on it this week.
That can be interesting.
I feel like the minimum requirement to watch this movie is at least twice, because everybody I know has seen this movie at least two times. Honestly, I can't remember a time that I've ever watched a movie more than once in the theater before. I don't think it's ever happened, to be honest with you.
I'll watch it a few times if it's good.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, like, I feel like if I'm not going to buy the DVD or anything like that, so I'll support it this way, like, because I like going to the theater, like, the whole experience.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, I'll support that.
Yeah, and I'm the opposite. I'm like, I'll watch it, then get the DVD or whatever, and, you know, and watch it that way. My other question I'll ask, too, is, I may as well get into it right now. I'll start with you, Kier. What was your overall thoughts on this movie?
I thought it was good. Like, overall, the story was excellent. The acting was good. I think it could have suffered, you know, like certain movies where they're like, you know, there's a lot of hype for it and you watch it and there's a huge letdown. But unfortunately, I don't think this movie suffered from that. So, like, my overall enjoyment was still high when I left the theater. And, you know, I was talking to people after what they thought. And so far, everybody I've seen it with loved it. So, yeah, so like my general experience, I thought it was a good movie.
What about you, Mambo?
Yeah, no, I mean, same thing. I mean, I think, you know, when you go in a movie like this, the expectations, you know, everybody's like, oh my God, I hope this is good. You know, because this is the idea. We almost have like, I think especially as black people, you have like almost a PTSD fear that if the movie isn't good, they'll never give money to another like black director or black filmmaker again, and it's like this apocalyptic vision if the movie isn't successful and good. And so like I think that was the thing I went into it, was just with this like hope, just please be good, please be a good film. And I think as far as like Marvel, I don't know how much my own bias of you know wanting it to be great and all that comes into play, but I think it was definitely for me one of the better Marvel films, if not the best, because I think I really appreciate the storyline. I think I differ from, you remember that was that whole thing about that one critic that from the Irish Times or something, who gave it a rotten thing on Rotten Tomatoes, the first negative rating, and his whole complaint was that he wanted to see him, you know, beating up more bad guys. I think for me, I like the idea of they develop the character, because you can always go along with somebody beating up bad guys and it's just like just action for action's sake. Then we're in like John Wick territory, right? Where it's just like, what's the body count at the end of the film, rather than like, what's the actual story? What motivates the characters? Who? How do I meet? And like, you know, I think that like when you watch this film, they pull you into the world. They pull you into like understanding what motivates the different characters, and like you just want them to be successful. You want them to succeed. You're into it. You're into the success of Wakanda. You're into the success of like all these different elements. And I think the way you do that is not necessarily by just like racking up a body count, but by, you know, giving people a story. And I think they did that really well. So I was really happy.
I agree with basically everything you guys said. The one thing I'll add is like, and to touch on that critic, I don't think people had the issue of it having a negative review. I just think the reason for the negative review was people viewed it as whack, just because knowing what everything that like seeing how high the movie was being rated, you don't want to get a negative downgrade because it was a lack of fighting. Like if you said because you know what, you didn't agree with the storyline, whatever it was, then you could be like, whether you disagreed with it or not, you could at least say, okay, well, at least this guy had some sort of a formed opinion. But when it comes down to it's, you know, it's not enough fighting. He didn't, you know, he should have beat up maybe like five more bad guys in the movie. And just like, really? Like, that's what you're going to get a negative downgrade for?
But this is my problem with Rotten Tomatoes, is that people have so much focus on, you know, the scores and all this kind of stuff. And then you move past, is the movie good? Is the plot good? Whatever. Right. Everybody who's part of Rotten Tomatoes, they need that byline so everyone can see their review. People go to the site because they need the clicks.
Right.
And so, like, the whole thing is about the clicks. So, like, if the movie's kind of getting panned, everyone's got to jump on board and make it. You're basically insulting, like, you're doing a dozen your mama jokes. Like, basically, you know, you have to be the loudest or the most animated when you say how much you hate this movie or how much you think it's the greatest. Mm-hmm. And I think that it takes away the cultural aspect of, why should I watch this movie? Why should you watch this movie? And Rotten Tomatoes is driving me crazy. Like, everything's on
the... They have to be so short, because, right, their reviews are like these, like, you can click and read the full review, but they have to have this, like, short, pithy kind of line to get the headline. I will say, though, Calvin, to get back on what you're saying with that critic and, like, the BS reasoning for it, like, the idea of, like, some Irish critic just saying, you know, I want to see him just kill more bad guys, feels a little almost like Laura Ingraham telling LeBron James, like, shut up and play.
Right,
like,
right.
He's like, Black Panther, just shut up and kill more bad guys. Like, what? No, we're going to tell a story. And you know what? You're going to sit there and you're going to like it.
Yeah.
Nobody cares what you think.
I mean, compared to, like, The Dark Knight or whatever, like, he wasn't fighting for the entire movie. He barely fought anybody. There's more dialogue and, you know, story building.
And those are the best type of movies, when there's actual substance behind the action. You know what I mean? It's not just Arnold Schwarzenegger just pulling out a machine gun and just, you know, just wing out 100 dudes. You know what I mean? Like, there's an actual substance behind it.
Yeah. Or when you go to a film, you know that that's what you're getting, right? Like, you go to see John Wick. Nobody's going to John Wick like, oh, I really want to get into the character and understand what motivates him and see where he's like, you know, what are going to be his next steps. And, you know, like, no, you're there to see a guy just like go ham on people the entire film. And not even get, like, barely hurt himself. But with a lot of the Marvel films, I think, especially if you want anything to have, like, sequels, and you want it to, if you want to have a broad appeal, and you want to, like, bring in families and all this kind of stuff, and you want so many different generations and so many different, like, cultures to all, like, gravitate to this movie, you need to have a good story at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they succeeded with this one, for sure.
Now, I'll add this as well. I also feel like I'm not supposed to say anything truly negative about this movie just for fear that my black card would be revoked or at least get put on probation. You know what I mean? So even if I had a negative thing, you're not going to hear from me. I'm joking. But
I'm joking. We had a buffer. I think you got 8 months before you can say anything that you didn't like about the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, no. The
people come down from their high.
You're like, you know what? You're just at a dinner party one day and you're like, hey, you know, the one thing I thought about Black Panther, you just got to gauge everybody's reaction before you say what you want to say. Like, we're like, all right, I'm going to shut that down.
Yeah,
like, we've got the daggers out.
Yeah, you're like six months later, you're still getting dirty looks. You're like, Black Panther, it's a great movie. It's still a great movie.
Great movie. Imagine if it was terrible and you had to say how great it was.
Oh, I know.
What's an example of that?
No, but I was dreading that for a good month. After, you know, when the hype started really building, I was like, oh my God, what, this thing's terrible. Like, who are we going to say? Like, I'm a big comic book fan, so a lot of people are like, hey, what'd you think of the movie? I'm just going like, I like the costumes, you know? Soundtrack is all right. You know, Kendrick is good. Like, cool.
It's like back in the day when it's like, what do you think of that person? Oh man, she's got a great personality. You know, you're like, all right, enough said. All right.
It's wonderful. Really beautiful inside. Really beautiful. The film is beautiful inside.
Beautiful inside, man.
Has a lot of character. The movie has a lot of character. A lot of character.
It's a lot of character.
There's a lot of
dialogue in it. Yeah, a lot of dialogue. Funny how that works.
For me, it goes without saying, this is probably one of the best superhero movies that I've seen. And The movie enjoyment is right up there for me for with the first Avengers movie and The Dark Knight. But in terms of just cultural significance, it's a step up from those two, obviously. Just because how the black community has resonated with this movie is something that I haven't seen in a very long time, honestly, if ever. And the pre-hype going into this movie was insane.
I mean, when has there ever been a movie that's had a 99% black cast?
Yeah.
With this big of a budget, with the star power in the film itself, that's like a superhero movie that's being pushed by Marvel. That just is never.
I don't think it's ever happened before. Yeah, no, it's never happened.
I mean, even when you look at if you look at the history of black superheroes in cinema, right? There's a whole wide range, right? From the all black cast in Meteor Man or something, or you have Halle Berry as Catwoman, but she's the only person of color in that, and it's not a great film. And then you have up to the Blade trilogy, right? And the Blade trilogy again, it's Wesley Snipes, and that's it. It's not the same kind of concept. It's not the same idea. He's the standalone black superhero in this film versus an entire ensemble cast of high-powered black actors portraying these characters in this whole world and universe that exists of black excellence. It's just so unbelievably unique that it's touching a lot of people, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking the big question I have about it is we have all this energy right now in the black community, especially when it comes to movie making and interest in the art form and that kind of stuff. And what are we going to do with it? that's the question that I was I love this movie. Movie's great. Okay, what's next?
You know what? I want you to hold that thought. I want you to come back to that topic. We're going to come back to that topic for sure. We'll come back to that topic. I know we discussed that. No, I'm going to let you run wild on that one because I have some things to say about that too. For real, I agree with you. But no, I was going to say the hype reminded me of the kind of hype you see when you see See, I'm not a Trekkie guy or a Star Wars guy like that, but that's the kind of hype you kind of see where you go to a theater and somebody's wearing a Chewbacca outfit or they look like Han Solo or Spock or something, you know what I mean? All these movies, including Black Panther, of course, are fictional, but Black Panther differs in the way that the story, even fictional, it's rooted in kind of truths and images that we want to see, you know what I mean? We witnessed the living example of a movement, basically all the celebrities, the social groups, the foundations that was buying out theaters for people to see this movie was just crazy. My personal favorite clip that I've seen was the Ron Clark Academy with the kids when they all found out they were gonna go watch Black Panther. They're dancing on tables and that. Mm-hmm. I know that one went viral crazy. That was my favorite clip. Just because of the it just represented the excitement in it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I wonder those kids. And I'd love to have had the chance to talk to them. I haven't read any interviews that people did with any of those kids. Mm-hmm. But how much were those kids super hyped about? This is what I wonder about a lot of kids is how much are they super hype about Black Panther because he's black and he's a black character versus they were should we go to a free movie? We go into a free Marvel movie and you're just hyped because you're just going to this movie. I think this day and thing stuff. Yeah, the idea that this resonates with people, I think there's a difference in there's this huge gap of how it resonates with people in our age group.
Yeah, I definitely think
younger versus younger kids who are.
No, I think the people it resonates with is more adults than people our age. Our feelings about it and how happy we are about the movie, I think it's more the older generation than it is the kids. Because to the kids, this is just another Marvel movie.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, and of course, why wouldn't they have a black, Marvel film? It makes sense. Why is that strange? I find it sometimes, because my previous job, I was working with a lot of young people, and sometimes you see their views and they're the way they think of race or talk about stuff, and you're just wait, what? You don't see why that's a big deal? Sometimes you're no. And you're trying to almost instill in them things, and you start realizing you're oh, wait. I'm just bringing my own baggage to this conversation. Yeah. You don't have the same hang up about stuff that I do.
You know what I equate that to? Because, like, we're the generation that they've only had MP3s and iPods and their phones. Mm-hmm. You know, we came from records and tapes and, you know, having to listen to the radio to record this thing before you can hear a song again. And then this is a generation that it just has it. Everything's just there.
Right.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't think it's big a deal.
I just think that, like, it's interesting. Like, I loved all those moments. I loved seeing all those moments of, like, young people, like, dancing and, like, getting super hyped that they were going to go see the movie. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I was kind of like, this is, I think a lot of adults are projecting the importance of this onto some of those kids. I don't know that all those kids actually understand. And not to say that it's not significant. It is significant. But I don't know that all those young kids realize how significant it is versus they were just, like, dance on the table because they're like, I'm going to a free movie. Yeah, I'm feeling hype right now. Because I got pretty hyped when I was, like, invited to a free version, a free screening of this film. So,
Well, it's funny. My pre-hype began when learning who was going to be in the cast. Like, once I heard who was directing the movie, Ryan Coogler and Michael B. Jordan was going to be involved. And then when he started seeing the other actors from, like, Angela Bassett and Forest Whitaker to, like, Lupita Nyong'o and, you know, like, when he started seeing all the different people start being casted in the movie and the writers and different things, like, that's, for me, that's when I got hyped. Not, it wasn't just the fact that, like, just seeing Black Panther alone was, you know, because I wouldn't say I'm a comic guy per se, but, like, I do follow Marvel to a certain extent. So, like, realizing that Black Panther was coming on the screen, I, like, with Marvel's backing, I'm like, yo, this is gonna be interesting. But then when you saw, like, how it was casted, like, how they went about it, I'm like, that's what made me, like, really, like, hyped to go watch the movie. You know what I mean? Because I don't think anyone at Marvel realized how big this was going to become, even though I know they pumped, like, $200 million into the budget. Because I think...
That's standard for them, though.
Yeah, because I think social media did all their marketing for them. Like, like, you know what I mean? Like, it became our movie. It's almost like that movie became our responsibility to watch. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, if we go back in time, we realize they didn't actually take any commercials out. There were no advertisements for it. Okay,
I don't remember seeing any posters.
Social media sharing.
Like, did you guys see anything on buses or any posters anywhere? Because I didn't.
Yeah, I wonder.
I mean, when I go into the subway station, 125th Street. It was like almost all Black Panther posters.
Right.
But that is 125th Street. It's definitely pretty
go in the east side and go in Manhattan, Lower East Side, and see what happens. Like, yeah, how many is going to be there.
But it's true. Like, I feel like I said, I feel like once I knew Marvel was behind, like, once you knew Marvel was on board and the type of people that was going to be involved, you're like, okay. Like, for me, like, I know you guys were saying, like, you guys were a little hesitant, hoping, like, the hype wasn't going to, like, overpass what the content of the movie was gonna be, but, like, for me, I don't know, for some reason, for me, I was like, I think it's gonna be a great movie. I just wasn't worried about it for some reason. I just feel like they weren't. I was like, there's no way they're gonna screw this up. They can't screw this up. They can't. Like, I'm just looking at the people, like, responsible in the movie. I can't. They can't do it.
But when you think of Hollywood, man, a lot of good filmmakers, a lot of really great actors make a lot of bad films.
True.
So there's plenty of pressure to, like, know that that's a complete possibility.
Yeah, you're right.
There's a lot of people, as much as Ryan Coogler is the director and worked on the screenplay, and, you know, Chadwick Boseman is an amazing actor, and he's the lead in it as Black Panther. At the same time, the people who are paying for this movie are the ones who, like, ultimately, I think there's always a chance somebody comes in and they're like, you know what, we really need to cut this. Yeah, cut this part, cut that. We want more of this. You know, that guy from the Irish Times comes in and he happens to do a consulting production on this job and starts being like, yo, less of this, like, relationship stuff and more of the just, like, killing random people thing. And then it just becomes a shoot 'em up terrible film or something. You know, that potential is always there.
No, it's true. You're right.
It's a testament. It's a testament a bit to, like, either Ryan Coogler or whoever the producer, the executive producers are on this. And I think some of those forces are, like, were kept in check. And you know what I mean? Like, that they were able to maintain a really good storyline throughout and maintain, character development. I mean, anytime you can convince people to let you do character development in an action film, I think you're doing something right.
All of those points, completely right. You're absolutely right. I agree with you 100%. But for some reason, I don't know why, just for some reason for this movie, I've just felt like, no, they're going to knock this out. I don't know why. I just felt like they can't screw this up. Yeah, they can't do it.
That's faith, brother.
Was that? That's faith, I guess. My faith was my faith was blind.
I was good from Captain America Civil War because you know, when I saw the action scene, I was like, okay, it was heavy CGI in that movie,
right?
And I was like, okay, his movements still look good, and he's whooping Cap's ass, and I'm on board this, and so like I was like, okay. Yeah. I feel like from the movie standpoint, them actually putting it together, they should be fine. My biggest concern was the hype for non-comic book people and not people that aren't aware of what's going on, what they're going to think about it. That was my biggest concern. Not so much that Marvel could make a good movie or not. Cause, you know, their track record is pretty good, like 10 years in.
Yeah.
So
agreed.
You know, but I was concerned of the if the casual people there are like, I'm watching Black Panther and I'm being dressed up for this. And I'm putting the kids in daycare, and I just get coffee, whatever. It takes five people. I'm buying tickets for five people. Those people, like when they get there, like fortunately, like they're happy too. So
I'll give you the joke, man. Like we went to watch the movie. And I was having this conversation with Mama about this. Like we took the day off. We watched it the day it came out. We watched the matinee. We watched it like at 1 o'clock, and we're like, you know what? Nice. The kids are in school and daycare. We're like. You know what? We don't even have to ask anybody. Let's just go watch this movie, you know, and take the day off. So we did that. And it's funny because we're running a little bit late because I'm like, I know I bought the tickets for like, it wasn't the VIP, but it was, you know, like the ones was you got like your own selected seating.
AVX.
Yeah. So I bought those ones. And so we're running a little bit late. So I'm like on the wife, like, yo, like, come on, man, let's go. And she's like, yo, like, leave me alone. I'm trying to get dressed for this movie. I got to put my makeup on just right. You know, and she's looking for like her head wrap and stuff, and you know, so I'm like, all right, I'll leave you alone. You know, we wore Hillman sweaters, like, so we're like, all right, let's okay, all right, I'll, you know, let me leave you alone, let me let you get ready, you know.
Put this on blast. I didn't technically take the day off work. I just went to work late. But now that it's out there in the world, I hope my boss doesn't listen to this podcast. And it's like, son of a gun. I was late to a meeting and everything. I was like,
wasn't feeling well, guys. Sorry. Yeah. I was.
I was happy to take the time off. It was well worth it, man.
No, for sure. And it's funny why I said before, like, it was like, I felt like it was our responsibility. Like, the movie became our responsibility. Mm-hmm. Like people were made to feel guilty about watching it on, like, illegally. Like, you weren't allowed to watch it on the Android box or your Fire Stick. You're like, you definitely weren't allowed to get the bootleg DVD on the street. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yo, talk about getting your black card revoked.
What? if you had something or anything negative to say about it, like, yo, keep it to yourself. I know somebody watched it on the opening weekend, and like two people in two different chat groups, and they both said it was okay. And I had to talk to Jesus just so I won't have the argument with him. Like, I was just like, I just wasn't here for the bullshit. I'm like, nah, like, mm-mm. Like, Black Jesus, come get your mans. Come and get your mans, Black Jesus. Because I'm going to go in on this guy if this guy keeps talking. You know? Like, I'm like, yo, just save this shit for yourself.
I want to hear nothing, but it was amazing.
Yeah. Like,
it was amazing.
I'm just like, yo, don't give me your critiques. Like, give me a month and then come back and tell me if you don't like it or not. You know what I mean? Like, it was like the devil coming. Like, get behind me, Satan. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I rebuke you in the name of Wakanda. Like, I'm not listening to what you got to say. I'm not listening to what you got to say right now. It's like, I ignored it. I just felt like the people were trying to troll the group. And I'm just like, and you know, the funny thing was, everybody ignored the guy. Like in two different groups. It was hilarious. Like, everybody just ignored the person. Like, they just continued talking. They're like, like, everybody, like, had that mental, like, the mental agreement, like, no, we're not falling for this. We're not doing this today. No.
Yeah. I know exactly who you're talking about. I also was like, man, I ain't got time for that. I'm not going to get into that.
Yeah, that was one person. Like I said, I know another person that said the same thing. Yeah, and then everybody just said, nope, we're just going to skip right over that.
That's like when you just like, that's like when you're on the subway and you just like see that person talking to himself, talking about the end of the apocalypse is coming. You're just like, man, nobody got time for you. You are in your own world. I'm staying over here.
But for real though, like I just think the post hype for it too is just, it's just been just as real. Like just the amount of, like, we talked about it, the amount of times that people to see this movie, it's crazy. Uh-huh. Like social media is still on fire. You're seeing all the merchandise that's coming out and different t-shirts. Like I got my eye on at least about 3 different t-shirts right now that I want to buy. And and now you're starting to see some of the behind the scenes stuff. Like even the girl, Lolita Wright, Shuri, who like you've seen mm-hmm. her in different, like, I don't know if you see this, Kyo, but you've seen like different clips of her freestyling on Instagram, like, you know, like behind the scenes stuff. So it's like you're seeing all of that now, and it's crazy, you know?
So like all the hype and all that around it, what about, like, how did you feel? I mean, I'm putting the question on you, but like how did you feel about the movie itself in terms of like what it set out to do? And like, did you feel it lived up to what it set out to do, like that telling of that story and bringing people into that universe?
I think it did. I think it more than, like I said, I don't think, like I said before, I don't think Marvel truly understood the impact it was going to have. I don't think it could have. Because you listen to some of the actors talking, even they're like, yo, they're blown away by the reactions of people in this movie. Like, I think mm-hmm. in terms of the storyline, in terms of, and we'll get to that in just a second, like, because I have a question I want to pose to you guys as well. But like just the way they put the movie together, I think they completed this job. Like, I know I'm giving like a short answer, but like, I think they set out what they were trying to do. I mean, I'm not saying this movie was perfect, you know, but
yeah.
It, at the same time, I think it set out to do the job it was supposed to do and then some, because I think, especially like I was talking to family friend of mine and we were having this conversation about Black Panther last week, and he was talking about how like in South Korea, they went out in their traditional garb because of how they're watching the rest of the world and watching how Black people were going to movies. Like you had some people going to movies looking like Prince Akeem from Coming to America with the fur and the lion fur and stuff. Like you're seeing all that, and they honestly went to the theaters with their South Korean traditional garb too, which I thought was cool. I'm like, that's crazy. And you saw that in different countries, and I'm like, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I don't think they realized the impact. I don't think anybody could account for that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But there's not a lot of movies that represent like a culture, and mm-hmm. other cultures can get behind it or at least appreciate what's going on there.
Right.
I think that's very rare.
Yeah.
It's like that idea that people are talking about, like, you know, some of the backlash you hear, and again, it's like very minimal, but like some of the backlash of people talking about, like, how can you have this like an all black film and it's all about it just being black, and what if we made it, what if there was a film and it was all white and we were like proud of it being white, and you're like, that's just called a film, like that's just called a movie. That's like what all movies are. So yeah, people of color like watching this film and freaking out or loving it and all that kind of stuff, just for seeing people of color being represented, just seeing black people represented, seeing like it goes to, I went to see it, actually the first time I went to see it was a group of people from work, and it was, and one of my colleagues, she's from, her family's from South Korea, when she realized there's a scene and it takes place in South Korea, she was absolutely loving it. It was, you know, it meant mm-hmm. something to her. It definitely is something that resonates, just like the setting, the people, it resonates in a way that I don't know. It's hard to explain, but like in a way that I think just was amazing to see. And I look forward to seeing it again.
So I'll ask this question here. What were your thoughts on the portrayal of the women in this movie? I'll start with you, Keo.
I thought it was interesting because, you know, there's a key thing about keeping the family intact mm-hmm. and hierarchy of, you know, who's in charge of the family and why. I thought that was, because that's really different from North America and what people expect about, you know, what is a family, you know?
Right.
And how are you supposed to raise your kids? Because there's a line about, I forgot how the line goes, but something about if you died before your son or something like that, you failed as a father. It was, but like, the key thing was
if you haven't prepared your children for your death.
And like that's a huge thing for, you know, leadership and, you know, how you raise your future generation. That's one of the key parts of the movie that, you know, I really took hold of. There doesn't seem to be a lot of people worried about keeping the families intact or how you should be teaching the next generation about how to be leaders and, you know, how the world is going to treat you exactly. So for me, I think that was the biggest thing.
I love seeing powerful, strong female leads in this film, you know. Queen Lupita Nyong'o is like a spy who's doing missions, foreign missions, and saving people in another country to deny playing as Okoye, playing the general. She's like in charge of the presidential guard. It was like an amazing idea and concept. And then and Shuri as well, being like the leader and head of all technology for the entire country.
Mm-hmm.
Like having a female character who is in this position that, especially like if you just relate it to technology in North American or European or, you know, Western society, it's always such a male dominated force that it's great to see women in those positions of power. And they were strong throughout. They didn't betray their strength through the entire film. You know, sometimes in movies you see them or put up women, you're like, oh, she's in charge of this or she's the general of this army. Oh, but she, of course, needs a man to save her in the end of the day or something like that.
Right.
Here you have the opposite, where you have Okoye is the one that's saving M'Baku in the battle, you know, mm-hmm. when the rhino's charging at him and all these other, they're the ones that are, the all-female guard are the ones that are holding down Michael B. Jordan and keeping him in check while the battle's kind of raging on. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was amazing to see.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they did a really good job with it.
Yeah, I think the portrayal of the women in this movie was like you guys said, I think it was amazing. They were the heroes in this movie. You know,
and they weren't like over sexualized in the way that I think a lot of other films also do this thing where they just like over sexualize all the characters, right?
I know.
The way that they dress and everything, it has to be like all hyper sexualized. Mm-hmm. So yeah, she's a superhero, but Wonder Woman is half naked at all times and must be, you know, it's like all these different like, and maybe not in like, you know, the Wonder Woman film is not necessarily true, but in a lot of cases, like that is the purpose. This woman is here because she is some sort of like female fantasy of representation of a female fantasy of some guy who wrote a comic book in his mom's basement. And like, here you have these characters build up as these strong female characters that they're just not hyper-sexualized. Of course, they're attractive and all this stuff, but it's like that isn't the key element of what makes them why they're on screen. It was impressive to see. I was honestly surprised by it, pleasantly surprised by it.
Yeah, same here.
It's pretty rare, though. Mm-hmm. It's very rare.
Yeah,
extremely rare. Yeah, those are things that like people screw up, even when it's a female-centered film. Those are the kind of things that people screw up. So it was good.
Honestly. I think on top of that, I think just the fact that they're being shown as like the Dora Milaje. I think they're being shown as powerful, strong, regal, smart, beautiful. They weren't soft. They weren't docile. They weren't unimportant or shown as weak. And as you mentioned, like they weren't over sexualized. Like I think, and it's funny that point. I think I didn't even think about that, but that is so true. Like the fact that they weren't. They're not like in a skin tight outfit, you know what I mean? And you're seeing all the curves of the body and you're like, you know, you're not even focused on that. You're just focused on all the other points. You know what I mean? Which is like super important.
Have you ever heard of like a thing like a lot of films don't pass? Have you ever heard of the Bechdel test?
The Bechdel test?
Yeah.
No.
So the Bechdel test is this like test for women in cinema and whether or not a film like meets these basic minimum requirements for it to just be like, okay, you've succeeded in the basic minimum requirements. But the basic minimum requirements are that the movie has to have at least two women in it, right? Those two women have to have a conversation with each other. They have to talk to each other. And the thing that they're discussing has to be something other than a man. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And when you watch films, it sounds like such a simple thing that like two women are in this movie, they talk to each other about something other than men. it's something that's shockingly hard to do in a lot of films. And like, you could go back and like look at a bunch of films. So many don't pass this basic test, and this one easily passes it. Mm-hmm. Which is like a good, it's like a basic, like for gender and women's empowerment in film, is a basic level that it should be achieving.
And I think that's where they win. Like, that's where Black Panther wins too. Like, with just the whole, like, when you look at this whole landscape of the Me Too movement and everything else, I don't think that was their intention, but maybe it was. I shouldn't say that wasn't. I would think that it was too. But like that, like they,
I think
really
they did it before all this stuff happened, though.
Yeah, no, they did. Yeah. I'm sure they did.
This film was already wrapped before then.
Yeah, no, for sure.
So it's just something that I think that they wanted to do. They were conscious of it, and they were just like, you know what?
They want a quality film,
and they were going for that.
And when
they
you
were
think
going
of like African
anyway.
Society, when you think of like. When you think of like African society, the idea of not having powerful women in a film about African society, are you kidding me?
I know.
That would just be, it would feel weird.
It's not authentic.
I mean,
yeah.
It would just be very, very disingenuous to have a film like that.
Yeah.
So I think they were just conscious of that.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it's just sitting back and thinking about it and getting buy-in from different people and talking to some people is as simple as all that it really takes.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly they consulted. They wanted to like make something that, you know, people would be proud of.
Yeah, so I think that's amazing that they were thinking of that before all this even happened. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's even amazing. It lines up perfectly. But even watching this a second time, I watched it yesterday, and just watching Okoye, Nakia, and Shuri, like, you know, on top of the Dora Milaje, like, those three characters in particular, like, you think about it, they had Black Panther's back, they had his heart, and they had his brain.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So, as powerful as Black Panther was, he was nothing without the women that represented him. You know what I mean? So I think that part was, for me, like looking at that, I thought that really struck out to me the second time I watched it. And just being proud of who you are. Like that scene where Okoye is going into the casino and she's like, good God, she hates her wig. You know what I mean? And she wants to show off her bald head, you know, and she's like, she can't stand it. Like that to me, but I thought that was... Like, I didn't even laugh when I saw that, though. Even the first time, I was like, yo, that's a powerful thing to say and show her disgust in that. Like, she is proud of her bald head. She is proud of who she is. Like, that I thought was incredible. Like, even that, and it's something small, and, you know, and people laughed at it in the theater, but I was like, yo, that's an incredible image in line right there. Subconsciously, that sits in your brain. Like, I thought that was amazing to see that.
To add on to what you said, like, all the women that were in the movie, they were working together to help the greater goal for the community.
Right.
And
right.
Yeah, that's a big thing where, you know, everybody who is there is on Team Black Panther. They're all on the same page. There's no person to say, you know what, I need to do this for me, or this is about what I need right now. This is like, we need to work together for the greater good of everybody. And that's huge from a movie standpoint, or even just from a cultural standpoint. Just talking about unity from, you know, different races, different ages, different cultures, just that whole, we need to be focused on one single task and as, you know, making this thing better.
Yeah. No, they did a really good job of that. And I think like going forward as the series like continues, it's only going to be more than that. I mean, as you know, like in the comic books themselves, Shuri, Black Panther's younger sister, eventually becomes like the Black Panther as well. So like there's that as an option that she becomes Black Panther at some point as well. And she is just like having a bright, a brilliant, you know, scientifically minded young woman as a central character. It was great.
Positive, man.
I mean, funny enough, like I just looked really quickly online. I mean, Thor, which I haven't seen yet, but the Thor movie that came out in November movie from last summer, Spider-Man Homecoming.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Neither of those movies meets that basic criteria. Neither of those movies have two women in them talking to each other about something other than a man.
Wow, mm-hmm. I didn't even think
How
about
crazy
that.
Is that? Like, it seems like such a simple thing that people would just like two women talk to each other. It doesn't seem like a big ask in a movie, but it happens way less than you realize.
Yeah, it really does. You're absolutely right. At this time, I want to give props to the costume designer of this movie, Ruth Carter, who basically wanted to show off all her Afro-futuristic design. You know, just black beauty and African print. And it kind of also helped push that negative stereotype out of, you know, when we think about Africa. And this is obviously decided way before Trump decided to call it a shithole, of course. But The attention to detail spent on this was, to me, was like another thing that really came at me. Because, like, according to the media group Now This, you know, you see them on like their little clips on like social media and stuff. They wanted they were saying that with Ruth Carter, they wanted to show an Afrocentric attire, jewelry, and natural black beauty, mm-hmm. a natural black hair, I should say, to the point that they did not. And this sounds funny, but like when you think about it, like again, the attention to detail and to make it authentic, how amazing this is. They didn't have a hot comb or relaxer anywhere on set. Which it sounds funny and crazy, but it makes total sense if you're trying to line it up with the story to make it as authentic as it could possibly be. To me, that's, it's so important to see how much representation of that even matters. You know what I mean?
People don't realize, like, I mean, when you guys know me, I mean, my family's from East Africa. I lived there for like a number of years. Right. Before coming to New York, and I mean, the hairstyles you see in Black Panther is just what I'm used to seeing when I was back home. Like, you know what I mean? Like, people don't have relaxed hair. I mean, it's there, but it's not as prevalent. Like, it's quite normal to see a woman with a shaved head. It's quite normal to see a woman with wearing like an afro or having her hair in braids or whatever. It's just like, so seeing that represented here and not like some sort of forced idea of what black beauty should be was a great thing. And the costumes are amazing, because the costumes are, it is a complete mishmash. Like what they've done, when you realize that there's like, I mean, there's Maasai warrior costumes. There's costumes from people like from like different places all around the continent. And they took them all and they are all in Wakanda, which is interesting to see, because it's a bit like, well, you know, on one side, it's like, okay, that's a bit ridiculous, because in a country as small as Wakanda, you'd never have that many different, like, but it was cool to see that they're trying to represent the diversity, you know?
I think it's an amalgamation of Africa in general.
Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Which is, like, a beautiful thing to see when it's all, like, laid out together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, like, some of it, you know, just obviously a lot of it's just made up and kind of, like, a futuristic design version of something that's traditional. But, you know, seeing Chadwick Boseman rock his, like, muumuu that he, you know, when he goes and he visits his sister and he has his sandals on and then he makes a joke about him and his sandals.
What are
like,
those?
That is just what I was, when I was living there overseas, like, every Friday, all the West African Muslim men, every Friday, that is exactly how they dress, every Friday. Mm-hmm. Because it's, like, their day to go to prayer, and it's, like, it's their day, and that is, like, traditional attire for a Friday. And seeing that was fascinating.
Yeah, shit. You know, it's funny. I didn't even think about that with you, with the fact that you're like, I didn't even think about that aspect of it. Like how realistic was that for you to see that? You know what I mean? Like I guess it really hit home in a lot of ways, right?
Yeah, I think like from East Africa, I definitely recognize when they're doing the tribal fight in the beginning, and they have all the different tribes there, and you see people. Mm-hmm. Like, I could recognize, like, legit recognize some of the outfits. And I'm like, oh, that's, like, East African. That's from this place, or that's from, you know, West Africa.
Right.
You could see it. I mean, it was... But some of the stuff was, like, a modern, kind of modernized version of it. But they did their homework, man.
No, they really did.
That's cool, though.
And they had, like, people that were dressed up. I don't know. If you watch it, like, there's people when he's out in the street. There's people dressed as, like, so in the Congo, in Kinshasa especially, there's this, like, group called Sappers, and they're, like, these really, it's a strange kind of subculture in Central Africa, but they're, like, these fashionistas, and the way they dress is, like, flamboyant, so these, like, really brightly colored suits, and they're just on the edge of, like, fashion and what's trendy, and, like, mixing African fashion with, like, European fashion and everything. And there's a bunch of them, like, sprinkled out through the movies randomly. It's really fascinating.
It's funny because, like, even watching the coronation and, you know, celebrating T'Challa as his new king, and just even how they led up to that, and just the whole, like, the African dances and the songs, and just how everybody was dressed for the occasion. And you know what I mean? Like, just all that to me, like, I was just like I said, again, the attention to detail was just, it was phenomenal, man. Like, that stuff really resonated home with me. Like, even the first time I watched, they really did their homework on this, man. They really nailed
it. Absolutely.
We got to talk about Eric Killmonger, y'all. So I'm just gonna ask this question real quick, and I know there's gonna be, you know, we're gonna dive a little bit into this, but was he a villain? I'll start with you, Keo.
Yes and no. I say no because, you know, he had a rightful claim to the throne. And basically, if you told the story from his perspective, from you don't even go to Wakanda, you don't see anything. You just see that this king came and killed this guy's father, and he got revenge, and he just did it from his perspective. He'd be the hero from the movie.
True.
You know, like, yeah, he's going back to this thing to claim, you know, you claim kingship or whatever from people who stole it from you, and they destroyed your family or whatever, like, and they just callously left you behind. Like, you would be the hero from that perspective. So that's why I say yes and no. I think yes, he would be the villain, because I think his goal of just taking over rather than, because I think Wakanda could take over from diplomatic means. They could just run the world if they wanted to.
Right.
Based on the technology and based on how the resources, they could easily, because that's oil, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
that's one of the most important resources on Earth. You have clean energy. You have things that replaces steel. You know, like, you have flying cars. Like, there's so many things that you could easily just take over. So if you could do that from that perspective, you didn't have to kill anybody to do it.
Well, okay. Well, there's a few things. You brought up a few things. But, like, one, I definitely agree. Like, Eric Killmonger is a fascinating character, right? Because you have this guy who's basically this parallel person to King T'Challa himself, right? Like, mm-hmm. There's a lot of, like, parallels in terms of what could have been and what was. So, you know, King T'Challa stayed in Wakanda, was never, like, affected by the images of Western society has of you, or this, like, disconnection from your origins, from your homeland, right? I mean, in a way, Eric Killmonger's character is just representing the African diaspora, which is this, like, disconnection from your original roots of where you come from.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a lot of animosity because he's like, why did this happen? Why did you allow this to happen? You know, this shouldn't have never been a thing. I mean, there's, like, the idea of betrayal, and one could even, like, make parallels of the betrayal of the king to his brother as paralleling, you know, how some tribes were even ransacking villages and selling them. So, like, Africans who were selling Africans to, you know, Europeans to go into the slave trade. I mean, there's just so many kind of different ways that you could tie these two characters in. But there's no easy way to say he's a villain. He's a villain to the people of Wakanda in a way, but he is a really sympathetic villain. As sympathetic, I think, as you can make a villain be, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And I think T'Challa knows that, and that's why he has, like, a difficulty with it at first, and why he even allows him the opportunity to challenge for the throne. I mean, he could have just killed the guy right on the spot. He didn't need to do anything.
Right.
He didn't need to, like, give him the chance to have the throne. I think he understood that what was done in the past was a wrong, and that this guy deserved his opportunity, deserved his birthright, and he let him have it. And yeah, it didn't turn out well for him at first, but in the end, it all worked out. But it's a fascinating character, and I think, like, you could probably write an entire thesis dissecting exactly how all of these characters mirror and represent actual historical realities of, like, Africa and the African diaspora and everything. I mean, I was interested, and I'll throw this question back to you guys, but when he, at the end, like, when he has that line,
yeah,
like,
burn me in the ocean.
I'm sorry, I don't want to butcher it, but essentially the idea of being his line is, like, he doesn't want them to save him, so that they can throw him in a prison, because he's like, yeah, my ancestors that, you know, threw themselves into the ocean knew it was better to die than to live as a slave.
Bury me in the ocean with my ancestors that jumped from the ships because they knew death was better than bondage. That was a line.
Right.
Yeah.
I just really found that line interesting. Of course, like, it's like a really powerful line. And I think essentially what I'm trying to say is, like, I guess when I hear that line, I was curious to know what you think of that line. Because in a way, that line is also saying, And I could be just reading too much into it, but it's like, in a way, he's saying that was the brave and intelligent thing to do. They knew that it was better to go this way. I don't know. I guess I was thinking, like, if my family was, if I was African-American and that was, like, my family's heritage, I might feel some type of way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel he kind of shits on Americans and, you know, West Indians.
It's a really powerful line, and I understand it, and, like, I think a lot of people, like, thought it was such a great line, and it's really powerful, and it is. But at the same time, it is a bit of a, or maybe I'm just reading it wrong, but there's a way of reading it where you're like, it's showing a bit of, like, shade on people that didn't take that route, right? Like,
right.
The smart thing to do was to jump overboard. But, I mean,
like, I thought the line was dope. But the thing is, though, I thought the line was dope, but in the movie coming from him, it kind of, I don't know, like, it kind of rubbed me the wrong way, seeing how that he is Wakandan and technically his ancestors, I guess except for his mom, weren't really part of that at all.
Mm-hmm.
His ancestors were chilling in behind walls.
Right.
In a great community, and everything was great for them. So, like, it kind of felt, I don't know, like, it felt kind of disingenuous, or it's just something that sounded cool at the time to say.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think, yeah. I also had the same thing when I was thinking that. I was like, but your ancestors are Wakandan.
Yeah.
They have never... But I
mean, you can always go back.
I was like, bro, you got that warrior tattoo on your leg. Like, you're good. The war dog tattoo. So I guess then in hindsight, you're like, oh, maybe his mom was African American. I don't know. There was just something that, like, I think it stuck with me a bit, that line. Like, in terms of, I think of, like, there were only two spots I could think of where I saw, like, potential missteps. And one of them, we laughed about it earlier, which is when Danai rips off the wig off the top of her head and, like, throws it away. And she's like, this is disgusting. I can't get this disgusting thing off my head.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like, there's got to be, like, I mean, can you imagine how many black women were in that theater wearing wigs watching that film? Like, yeah. For all, it's easy to sit there and, like, crack a joke. And to be honest, like, yeah, probably a lot of Africans would be like, why would you do that? Why would you wear that? That's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't make it necessarily right. I did think that was an odd thing to include.
For her, I think it's kind of meta because her character in The Walking Dead wears a wig.
Okay. I don't watch so, like, Walking Dead.
I feel it kind of like it could have been like it. If it was written for her character in particular, it could have been like a meta inside joke if you know who she is from The Walking Dead. If she wears like these long braids, or they're like dreads.
Yeah.
But like everybody knows she's bald and she's wearing this thing for the show. That I never took it as an insult to black women in general. If they wore, you know, weaves or wigs or anything. Honestly, I look at it from a meta perspective of that's probably like a wink to people who know who she is from the show.
From the show, okay. Yeah, I don't watch Walking Dead, so I wouldn't know, so I'll take your word for that. But I received it. I felt it was a great line. It was like, first, let's start there. That was a great line to say. I know everybody loves that line. Like, I'm seeing it on T-shirts now. like, it was a great line, but it was also, I felt the same way you felt, Mambo, about like, is it a shot? Like, does that mean that the people who made it through slavery, were they weak? You know what I mean? Because of that, you know what I mean? So it was definitely a line that was made for great conversation. You know what I mean? Like, that's the way I took it as. I'm like, this is a line that you're going to definitely have at the dinner table because somebody is going to feel like, oh, that was an awesome line. He's right. And there's other people going to be like, yo, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, no, my ancestors made it. They made it through, you know, and look, we're here now. And now we're trying to, you know, like, make change and, you know, in the following futures going forward. So, like, I thought it was a great line because of the fact that it could enhance like future conversations, but I think but I also think too, like, yeah, you felt funny about that line because you're like, yeah, like, you, the people who made it through slavery, all the black people that made it through slavery through that time, they're not weak. They went through hell to basically push our generations forward, right? So,
but you can question, like, is jumping off the boat the easy way out versus
right.
having to dig yourself up and get out of this thing that you're putting through.
Right, right. That's what I saw. I was like, it's a heavy line. Like, it's a heavy line because of that conversation. But I think people are just receiving it like, at least it seems like people are receiving it as, yeah, like, that's crazy. That's a great way to go. And it's like, I think it's just heavy just because of everything that it means that goes along with it. I don't think that either decision you make, whether you jump off that ship or not, is weak.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and it's funny. That wasn't, you know, it's weird. That wasn't a line that resonated with me, to be honest with you. Like, as much as, I'll tell you what, like, when I watched the movie the first time, I was like, yo, this guy's not a villain, you know? Like, he's not a villain at all. And then when I watched it yesterday, I'm like, yeah, well, yeah, he did murder a lot of people, man. Like, he, I'm like, damn, he got to get some of this villain, this villain gravy on his, he's got to get some of this villain sauce. He definitely got to get some of that. Like, yeah.
He did some bad stuff, man.
Yeah, yeah, he did some bad stuff. You got to put some villain sauce on that rice. Like, you definitely, you know what I mean? Like, he's definitely got to eat some of that. Yeah, for sure. For sure. 100%.
Can we talk about the one thing, like, why did he kill his girlfriend? Like, you, like, Michael B. Jordan just, like, shot up his girl for no reason whatsoever. Like, he didn't have to kill her.
he's like, yo, you're in my way. I know. That part I was like, damn, yeah, I guess.
And that's what I mean.
I know, right? He couldn't pull her aside and be like, yo, I don't think this is going to work out. You know, I want you to have a better life without me. You know, maybe I'll come back for you.
Yeah. Why invite her? Why invite her to the place if you know you're just going to, like, have to kill all these guys? Like, what?
I know.
So, hey, babe,
stay home.
Babe,
like,
babe, wait in the car. Wait in the car.
I think they did that to make sure there was no question about, okay, this guy's a bad guy. Like, if he had any sympathy for him, it's supposed to be like, well, no, he's really bad. He kills people, even his girlfriend, so don't get too invested in him.
True.
You're a relaxed guy. But
he's a super bad guy. He's a really bad guy. Like, if you were thinking about it.
Even though you sympathize with him, make no mistake.
Yeah.
Watch him get shot. Like, he's still a bad guy.
Unnecessarily killing his girlfriend.
Right, right. but it's funny, like, just to go back to what I was saying before, but, like, after watching it the second time, I'm like, he really resonated with me the second time just because watching his pain and his anger, it reminded me of, like, and just for, I guess, my personal thing, not to go, like, real heavy for a second, but, like, it kind of reminded me of someone in my family that I was really close with, and without, you know, getting into specifics, no, this family member is not a murderer. but like,
good disclaimer.
Just to put the disclaimer out there, just to make sure. But, like, yeah, the pain and the rage, like, it reminded me of that family member. Like, that, while everybody loves that bury me in the ocean line, like, for me, when he gets, for me, my thing was when he got stabbed in his chest and he was like, you know, like, man, you know, my pops wanted me to see Wakanda. He wanted to show me Wakanda one day, you know. He's like, you believe that? And he's like crying. He's like, you know, like, just a kid believing in fairy tales. Like, it's funny, like, when I heard that the second time, I got a lump in my throat. And at first I thought it was just a popcorn. Cause I was like, yo, they really like fucking up with this popcorn right now. They don't make it like they used to. And then I'm like, no, that's my lump. I created that lump in my throat. but for me, it's like, I really like, it's for me, like, I recognized his pain, not just in him or, like, my family member, but, like, just so many of our people that we've come across, that, you know, that we've ran into in our lifetime that had that kind of past where it's like, they felt like they were left behind. They felt like they were forgotten. You know what I mean? Like, things happened to them, and it's like, and it's like they didn't bounce back from it as well as they could have. And understandably so, because sometimes those circumstances lead you in a direction where it's really hard to bounce back from. You know what I mean? So when I watched that, he really resonated with me in that. And I think, as much as I love T'Challa, as much as I love Black Panther, I think he equally was, like, my favorite character alongside of him. Because of that.
I like Killmonger. I thought he was more interesting than Black Panther, to be honest. Just like his story and the things he went through. Like, from his perspective, everything was hard. Whereas for Black Panther, everything came to him pretty easy.
Right.
I don't know. So I was just saying, like, I felt, from, you know, for somebody to relate to, Like that, I thought that Eric Killmonger's character was more relatable. If I had one issue with the plot, I wish that they would have just stopped with him trying to take over the throne and stopped it there. Mm-hmm. Instead of, oh, I want to take over the world too. Like, that seems so, like, on the nose. Like, so Dr. Evil, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know. If you just stopped at the throne.
Show his true anger, right?
Yeah, if you stopped at just the throne and you showed what he went through, whereas the child is chilling his whole entire life, everything's coming to him easy, yeah, and you showed those two parallels, there would be no question that him being a villain would be one of the greatest villains hands down in cinema.
I was going to say, to that point, is that it's interesting you mentioned like that about, like, I think a part of that is connections to culture, connections to your home, like where your family's from.
Right.
Because for all of us, right, if you're a person of color who grows up in North America, in Europe or whatever, and you're in a different place than where your parents came from or your grandparents came from, there's like an otherness that is thrown on you, right? Mm-hmm. And so you have this, like, when you can maintain that connection to your culture, right? Like, my father, for instance, you know, I speak some Swahili, but, like, it's not very good because I didn't maintain that. Like, my dad didn't maintain that when I was a kid.
Right.
And it's a bit of a shame because, you know, you come and you're in this culture where you're always kind of told, oh, you're Canadian, but you're not, you know, really, or you're American, but you're not really. Because there's this other ideal of what a Canadian is, of what a, you know, an American is, of what a British person is.
Right.
And so maintaining that connection to your home, to, like, whether that's in the West Indies, the Caribbean, or whether it's in, you know, Africa, there's a certain, I don't know, comfort that comes from that. And I think, like, that's what he was kind of expressing, is, like, he's missing a lot of that. Like, right? Eric Killmonger's character is missing that connection. Mm-hmm. His father had told him about this thing, so he had this, like, vision of what it was, but he never had a connection to it. Mm-hmm. And he's in this space where he's constantly being told that you're other, you're not of here, you're not, like, you know, you're not a real, like, American or whatever. And mm-hmm. and you know that there's this other thing, but you're not connected to it. I don't know. It's like that. It's interesting, like, that frustration that his character experiences ultimately turning him into a bit of a jerk, but you can kind of see it and understand it.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's one of the few times in watching movies where you actually felt for the bad guy. And I'm not talking in, like, mm-hmm. the Scarface kind of way. Like, like, you actually, like, it really resonated, like, with you. Like, it really resonated mm-hmm. with you.
There's a difference between, like, a lot of bad guys, you can want the bad guy to win, but you mm-hmm. don't really, like, feel sorry for him, right? Like, you, like, in Eric Killmonger, like, you feel for him in a way.
Yeah. Yeah,
you don't
yeah.
want him to win, but you also feel for him. Like Scarface, you want him to win, but you don't really think he's a good guy.
No, of course not. Yeah, really of course not. Yeah. Of course not.
But Eric Killmonger is, like, it's interesting. His character, you realize, like, what they're saying in the movie is that they're saying his character through years of, like, being disconnected from his culture and all that, and, like, growing up in American society, that he's too damaged.
Think about this. Isn't it amazing that we've been talking this long? We haven't even talked about Chadwick Boseman playing Black Panther yet. Like, think how good that movie is. The fact that we haven't even talked about the main character yet. We haven't even had a 5-minute, 2-minute discussion on this guy yet. Like, that to me is probably, like, why this movie's a winner. And he did a great job,
accent,
by the way.
His generic African accent, pretty good.
Pretty good.
It's, like, interesting, like Black Panther, like, Wakanda somewhere in Central Africa.
Mm-hmm.
They all speak in Xhosa, which is, like, from South Africa.
Okay.
And I think his accent felt like West African. So it was, like, it was a good, like, amalgamation of Africanness in that film. Yeah.
See, and that's the same, because we're West Indian. Like, actually, what's your background, Keo?
Jamaican and Barbados.
Okay, right. So like, being that our background is West Indian, it's like the same thing when, like, you watch, like, Mark for Death and the Jamaican guy comes on screen and he's like, yeah, man, I'm going to shoot you up, man, and da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, and you're just like, God, get the hell out of here, you know what I mean? Anytime somebody plays a Jamaican role, you're like, and I'm not Jamaican, but, like, anybody who plays a West Indian role, you're always, like, sitting up in your chair like, okay, are they going to get this? And it's like, yeah, Stella, yeah. Stella got your groove back. And it's like, ah, like, this ain't shit. You know what I mean?
You can't do it.
So that's interesting. Like you're giving him a passing grade on his accent. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's good.
Passing grade for passing grade for sure. I mean, like, but all these guys, I mean, they have, you know, there's somebody that's clearly gone and said, all right, what does somebody from this region sound like? Mm-hmm. But yeah, his accent is it's interesting. It's definitely African.
So just to talk about Chadwick just for a second here before we start to wrap up this podcast. What kind of career is this guy building up right now? Like, you think about it. I mean, I'm sure he's played in other roles and other movies and stuff before, but I mean, the last few years he's played Jackie Robinson in 42. Then he plays James Brown in Get On Up. And now he has this third kind of like iconic role in Black Panther. And his influence, and we were talking kind of about this offline a little bit, Mambo, but like his influence on kids is going to be something interesting to watch, because like even coming out of the theater last night, I'm seeing kids, you know, look at like the poster and they're like, no, I'm T'Challa. And they're going crazy battling back and forth. And I know some people have seen these clips of two Black kids having that conversation look in the poster. And I'm watching the same conversation and it's a Filipino and a white kid. You know, so I'm looking at that and I'm like, wow, like that is crazy to see. You know what I mean? Like for something like that, because for so long we've seen it the other way. You see Superman, you see Christopher Reeves, and you're like, no, I'm Superman. I want to be that guy or Spider-Man or whatever. And so watching a dark-skinned Black guy with an afro kind of, you know what I mean, having this influence on the younger generation, I'm like, yo, this is actually really cool. Like my daughter, like I watched it with her yesterday and like she wants to be Black Panther. She, you know, like as much as she liked the Dora Milaje and you know, when Nakia and Shuri and Okoye, she was like, no, I want to be Black Panther. She's asking me for Black Panther toys. And I'm like, wow, that's really cool. You know what I mean? Like, so watching how his career is kind of like the trajectory and how it's going up, especially playing this role, like I think he did a great job.
Yeah.
I think the other side effects of that, I think, is going to be really interesting. Because for me, I was sold on him from Civil War. Like when he played Civil War, when he played Black Panther in the Civil War, Captain America's last movie, I was like, yeah, I'm like, when I heard the movie's coming out, I'm like, yeah, I'm already there. Like, you know, like,
yeah,
I'm
sold. For sure.
He got me, you know? So, yeah. But I'm like, he has a chance to be like associated to this role forever, like Sean Connery was to James Bond, you know what I mean? Like, especially if there's going to be a part two and part three, like, so this could be an iconic move for him, you know? And I know you guys want, you know, before we wrap up soon, I know you guys had a couple of points I want to revisit. Mambo, I know you had some things you want to say about, that you want to talk about M'Baku, like his representation, his role in the movie. I know we were kind of talking about it offline. Did you want to add anything to that part of it, or?
I mean, no, I think, it's what we were talking about before. I mean, just, I think I like M'Baku's character. I think it was an interesting, you know, it's an interesting, like, character of, you know, villain who turns into kind of neutral character who turns into supporting character, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I think, like, I know that he's already, you know, he's in Infinity War. He's going to be, like, an ongoing character. Mm-hmm. And it'd be interesting to see how they build him, you know, change his character up. I think they handled it really well also, you know, because I mean, when you think about what his character was in the original comic books, and they called him Ape Man, it's a good thing that Ryan Coogler, this is what happens when you have like Black costume designers and Black producers are like, yeah, we're not going to use that name. We're not going to call him Ape Man. We're gonna go with let's go with M'Baku, because I think Ape Man is not really the way to go here.
Right.
So I think it was like good that they made that change and handled that properly and created this character that I think he's a really good character, and he's funny. He provides levity. It was good to see, and I'm interested to see where his character goes in the future.
And the fact that Winston Duke, the guy that plays M'Baku, is from Trinidad and Tobago.
Yeah, no. Yo, what is up with... Yo, can we talk about this? Like I said in the group, what is up with all the West Indians stealing these jobs from Africans?
Yeah!
Yo, there are so many Africans ready to work, my man. And you got all these West Indians playing Africans. This is the, like, what we call it, like, what do we call it, whitewashing, when we give, like, all these parts of people of color to white people? What do we call it when we give African parts to all like West Indians and African Americans. There's like one, like who is African in that? Lupita Nyong'o and Denai are like the only two Africans in this damn movie. What is that?
Yeah, that's true. It.
More oxtail, more dumpling, more roti, more selfish. Yeah.
Jeez, lasers and some horns.
I'm being real ignorant here. My bad. I'm sorry. Let me rein it back in.
You know how many out of work African actors there are? They're just like, oh, come on. They went and like did the part. They're like, I don't know if you're believable as an African. We're going to take this Trinidadian guy instead. Jesus Christ.
They didn't even film in Africa. They filmed in
Atlanta,
Australia,
right?
Atlanta. And yeah, and South Korea.
And you got a bunch of like Africa. West Indians and you got a bunch of West Indians and Americans speaking in Xhosa. In Xhosa of all languages. Jesus.
Tell them why you're mad, son. Tell them why you're mad.
Yo.
I had a big debate about this with my girl, man. Yeah, he said the exact same thing. He's heated, too. So I was like, I don't know, man. What do you want me to say?
You're like, I didn't direct it. What do you want me to do?
Well, we saw that it was filmed in Australia and nothing was in Africa. Because all of her friends are from Africa. So everybody's online is like, oh, that looks like some place that, you know, from back home. I was like, nope. No, I just sat quietly in the chair like, nope.
Yeah, wait. You know what? It's hard to... I mean, let's be honest, the vast majority of that movie is CGI'd anyways, so
it doesn't
matter. Right. The way you film nowadays. It's really all about where it's the cheapest to film and where you get the best tax breaks.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You can make anything look like anything.
Yeah.
In the movie, they could have flown to South Africa and it really would have been like Scarborough, right? Like,
yo, man,
they would have shut down the Scarborough Town Center to film certain parts of the movie, right? Like... Like at this stage, you're right. Like it's all about where you can save the money, right? So
yeah,
but
well, there's a lot of CGI, dollars. And it cost $200 million with the tax break. So
right,
I think Disney was like, "Yo, yeah. Save the money. We ain't going to Africa. Save the money."
They're like, "What? You want to take all this production over there? No, you go down to Atlanta. Take this shit to Atlanta. You use the same studio that Tyler Perry uses to get half price because he ain't making no movies this year."
and if it's booked, you go find somewhere in Stone Mountain and you go film that too. Like just, whatever you gotta do.
Bush. Yeah. Take all them white people out of the Appalachian Mountains. Just go do it there.
And Baku's role was dope. Cause that line he has where he's like, you know, when he's going after Ross, Agent Ross, and he's like, you know, you speak another word, you know, and I'm going to feed you to my children. And then they stop and he's like, no, I'm just joking. We're vegetarian. He just breaks out laughing.
We're
like, yeah, I thought that was great. And it's like the fact that he continued laughing, like even they're trying to like talk to him, he's still laughing. I'm like, yeah, that's like I said, they nailed it, man. They nailed it.
I met him. He came by the office the other day. Mm-hmm. Super nice guy. Mm-hmm. Really nice dude. Yeah. Super chill. Like, you wouldn't think that this guy had just done some like $200 million movie. He's just like, hey man, what's going on? How you doing?
Yeah. But I mean, I'm sure in the next year or so his life is going to change, especially if he's
in the
Avenger Affinities movies and stuff. It's going to change.
Mm-hmm. Let him swing by the office next year. He'll be like, who are you? I don't know you. Why are you talking to me?
Well, no, that's not true. I mean,
that last year.
No, I'm sure you'll be the same. You'll be the same mild mannered guy. I mean, he is Trinidadian, so I mean, you know, it's probably.
Start the plug already.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not like fame could ever go to a Trinidadian's head, right?
No, never. Never.
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. No, totally impervious. Humility. The humility of Trinidadians.
Thank you. Thank you.
It astounds me.
Thank you for recognizing. Yeah. Thank you.
Second only to Jamaican humility, really, honestly.
I was waiting for you.
I have so much to learn from you guys. So much to learn from you.
We'll set up some seminars in Brooklyn next week. So we'll let you know. We'll let you know. Keo, so I know you wanted to bring up something before we wrap up the podcast, and I know we were talking offline about this a little bit. I know you're kind of asking the question, basically, like, what essentially happens now with black movies in terms, like, what does this do with black movies going further and how they're going to be made, in a sense, right?
So I was just curious about the future. Like, are people going to capitalize on all this interest in Africa and, you know, black culture, are, and all these investors and people? Because, like, there's this chance that we have, or we made, you know, one of the biggest movies of all time, the all-black cast. So it kills the, you know, stereotype of, you know, no one wants to see movies with black people in it. So I just wanted to know, like, what are we going to do with all this energy behind us right now?
I think that's going to be the million-dollar question, I believe. I don't have an answer to that. But for me, I would say it's funny because I had this conversation with my brother, and we were talking about this because I was saying, like, you know what, you know, maybe this is going to change how things are viewed for in terms of making black movies and black content in Hollywood. And he was like, well, you know what, we said the same thing about Malcolm X, you know, back in the early 90s. And, you know, and then they had a wave of
same thing about Obama.
Yeah, they had a wave of good to great black movies in the 90s. And then it just stopped. Right.
Yeah.
So it's like, will this resuscitate it? You know what? I guess time will tell. I don't know. The last few months in the certain podcasts that I've had, in like one with the Black Television Renaissance podcast and then the Core Cutting podcast that you're part of, Keo, like the one thing that we kept hollering at was that the structure of the model is now changing. So like the power structure of how things are laid out now is starting to crumble a little bit. So I'm interested to see now, how, like, with that happening and the success of this movie, how does that correlate? Like, how is that going to go off in the future?
You have all these entertainment people. You have Oprah, you have Jay-Z, Beyonce, you know, Chris Rock, Kevin Hart, like The Rock. Like, you have people who have real money and power now versus what they were in the 90s.
Right.
You know,
true.
Only Oprah was successful and accepted in the mainstream in the 90s. Mm-hmm. You have a ton of people now who have money, power, and access to doing things. And so far, they're doing their own thing, but they're not really advancing anybody else. So I guess that's the question.
And how would you answer that? Because I guess, like I said, I think my answer, I don't know.
We'll wait for that answer.
I don't know, man. I'm not encouraged right now. I'll put it like that. With my ear to music and just in general, like, it's, I'm not encouraged. Well, hopefully it'll change. We'll see. But because it's only been 2 weeks, I'll give it a year. But I'm not encouraged.
Because, I mean, in television, you're starting to see the renaissance a little bit. Let's see what happens for Hollywood, because that's a whole other world. That's a whole other world. As we're finding out in the last few months with this whole Me Too movement and everything that's happening, it's a whole different world compared to a lot of industries. So let's see what happens, man. Like it's a great question. For me, I don't have an answer for it. I don't know. But like I said, it's just interesting to see how it's gonna play itself out in the next few years.
Hopefully for the better.
No, let's hope so. But I mean, one thing's for sure, this movie broke all type of stereotypes in terms of, hey, you know what? Black movies aren't really represented by black people. You know, they don't make real money and stuff. But I mean, I've lent this platform to have entire podcast shows on certain movies like Juice and Boomerang and different things, right? So it's like those movies will always be classics to us. You know, they're like undeniable classics to us and to a lot of people.
Yeah.
But it's like they always try to say, well, it's not represented, you know, financially the right way, even though you're looking at the box office numbers and you're like, really? You could make more movies like this? Like, they do work, you know? So seeing it on this context, because it's a superhero movie and Marvel's backing it and everything else, I don't know if it's going to have a major budget behind them again in terms of that aspect. But it's nice to see that finally here's a big budget movie. It's entirely black casted and it's majorly successful. It might be one of the most successful movies of all time. Like right now it's trajectory.
Yeah, it's
to be
on pace.
Yeah. It's on pace to be like what? Like just only behind like Star Wars, basically. You know what I mean? Like right now. So it's like, that's interesting to see. Okay. And just my last question was just your final thoughts on the movie. Mamba, I'll start with you, cause I know you gotta go.
That's like a really like loaded. That's a really loaded big question. I mean, final thoughts of the movie. I'll just keep it short. I'll say that my final thought in the movie is I loved it and I look forward to seeing more. And I just hope that they do more of them. and that this opens up the doors to more movies like it, you know, in the same kind of vein. And like you guys are saying, like, it now shows that there's a lot of potential and possibility for, like, an all-black cast can do something on this big of a scale and make money and be successful and be popular in all different markets around the world. So the more, the better.
And what about you, Kia? What's your final thoughts?
I guess for the future, it proves that you don't have to compromise. You don't have to say, well, we need to add a couple more people here, or we should tell some more jokes, or whatever. If you tell a good story, people will come. So that's it.
Okay, no doubt. Brothers, thank you for coming on this podcast today to talk about Black Panther. It was really, really appreciated. I love all the jokes and just everything that we shared today, man. It was dope. I really appreciated it.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Okay. Thanks for having me.
Yes, and Mambo, just before you go, I need to get your talents again later in the year when we do the 30th anniversary for Coming to America. Just letting you know now.
I've seen that movie so many times, bro. I've seen that movie so many times. I love it.
I'm just letting you know. Just, yeah.
I'm all in. Yeah. Sounds good.
Clear your schedule sometime in the summer for that. At least another, you know, like, hour or whatever. Just find a little time for me.
Done.
All right, brothers. Thank you.
All right, man.
All right, man.
Thank you all for tuning in to the AV podcast of Celsius AV Radio. Special shout out once again goes out to Andrew Mambo and DJ Keo for coming on the show and breaking down Black Panther with me. I'll say this again. I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed discussing this topic. Feel free to share your thoughts on the movie, of course. But for me, I really think this is an instant classic. Especially when you combine the high quality of the movie itself, the storyline, the amount of records is broken in the box office, the way that the culture is gravitated toward this project, the movement that is created as a whole, the approval rating it got from everyone, young and old, no matter the race, color, or creed. Even something as simple as being super conscious as what you're going to wear and how are you going to dress to watch this movie. It's about a 90% chance that we'll be talking about this movie and everything surrounding it 20 years from now. I'm just glad that it met my high expectations and that I was able to witness it twice. And like I said, if you haven't seen this yet, seriously, what are you waiting for? If you ignore my spoiler alert disclaimer, I hope we at least made you get off the chair and at least book your tickets to go see it. It's a very cool experience all the way around. And with that said, you can catch all of the South Sharaf shows wherever you listen to podcasts. You can listen to the episodes on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Stitcher. And make sure you subscribe to that and to check out the Foundation website and to listen to my entire catalog of podcast shows. Make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. For Andrew Mambo and DJ Keo, this is Cal C, and you've just tuned in to the AV podcast on SouthShore AV Radio. Until the next podcast, folks, Wakanda forever. Peace. We out.